Chapter 23. Ricardo gave his leg a resounding slap. First spoil in my new life, he went on with harsh joviality. He dodged of carrying it down there, I learned later. I carried it stuck in my belt that day. No, I hadn't much stomach for the job. But when you work with a gentleman of the real right sort, you may depend on your feelings being seen through your skin, says the governor suddenly. It may even be looked upon as his right to hear a gentleman speaking there. But what do you think of taking him with us in the boat? And the governor starts arguing that the beggar would be useful in working our way along the coast. We could get rid of him before coming to the first place that was a little civilized. I didn't want much talking over. Out I scrambled from the boat. Eh, but will he be manageable, sir? Oh, yes. He's daunted. Go on, cut him loose, I take the responsibility. Right you are, sir. He sees me come along smartly with his brother's knife in my hand. I wasn't thinking how it looked from his side of the fence, you know, and Jiminy, it nearly killed him. He stared like a crazed bullock, and began to sweat and twitch all over, something amazing. I was so surprised that I stopped to look at him. The drops were pouring over his eyebrows, down his beard, off his nose, and he gurgled. Then it struck me that he couldn't see what was in my mind. By favor or by right, he didn't like to die when it came to it. Not in that way, anyhow. When I stepped round to get at the lashing, he let out a sort of soft bellow. Thought I was going to stick him from behind, I guess. I cut all the turns with one slash, and he went over on his side, flop, and started kicking with his tied legs. Laugh. I don't know what there was so funny about it, but I fairly shouted. What between my laughing and his wriggling, I had a job in cutting him free. As soon as he could feel his limbs, he makes for the bank, where the governor was standing, crawls up to him on his hands and knees, and embraces his legs. Gratitude, eh? You could see that being allowed to live suited that chap down to the ground. The governor gets his legs away from him gently, and just mutters to me. Let's be off. Get him into the boat. It was not difficult, continued Ricardo, after eyeing Schomburg fixedly for a moment. He was ready enough to get into the boat, and here he is. He would let himself be chopped into small pieces with a smile, mind, with a smile. For the governor. I don't know about him doing that much for me, but pretty near, pretty near. I did the tying up and the untying, but he could see who was the boss. And then he knows a gentleman. A dog knows a gentleman, any dog. It's only some foreigners that don't know, and nothing can teach them either. And you mean to say, asked Schomburg, disregarding what might have been annoying for himself in the emphasis of the final remark, you mean to say that you left steady employment at good wages for a life like this? There, began Ricardo quietly. That's just what a man like you would say. You are that tame. I follow a gentleman. That ain't the same thing as to serve an employer. They give you wages as they'd fling a bone to a dog, and they expect you to be grateful. It's worse than slavery. You don't expect a slave that's bought for money to be grateful. And if you sell your work, what is it but selling your own self? You've got so many days to live, and you sell them one after another. Hey? Who can pay me enough for my life? Hey? But they throw at you your week's money, and expect you to say thank you before you pick it up. He mumbled some curses, directed at employers generally, as it seemed, then blazed out. Work be damned. I ain't a dog walking on its hind legs for a bone. I am a man who's following a gentleman. There's a difference which you will never understand, Mr. Tame Schomburg. He yawned slightly. Schomburg, preserving a military stiffness reinforced by a slight frown, had allowed his thoughts to stray away. They were busy detailing the image of a young girl absent, gone, stolen from him. He became enraged. There was that rascal looking at him insolently. If the girl had not been shamefully decoyed away from him, he would not have allowed anyone to look at him insolently. He would have made nothing of hitting that rogue between the eyes. Afterwards, he would have kicked the other without hesitation. He saw himself doing it, and in sympathy with this glorious vision, Schomburg's right foot and arm moved convulsively. At this moment, he came out of his sudden reverie to note with alarm the wide-awake curiosity of Mr. Ricardo's stare. "And so you go like this about the world, gambling," he remarked inanely, to cover his confusion. But Ricardo's stare did not change its character, and he continued vaguely, "Here and there and everywhere." He pulled himself together, squared his shoulders. "SN apostrophe T, it's very precarious," he said firmly. The word precarious seemed to be effective, because Ricardo's eyes lost their dangerously interested expression. "No, not so bad," Ricardo said, with indifference. "'Tis my opinion that men will gamble as long as they have anything to put on a card. Gamble? That's nature. What's life itself? You never know what may turn up. The worst of it is that you never can tell exactly what sort of cards you are holding yourself. What's trumps? That is the question. See? Any man will gamble, if only he's given a chance, for anything or everything." "You too, I haven't touched a card now for 20 years, said Schomburg in an austere tone. "Well, if you got your living that way, you would be no worse than you are now, selling drinks to people, beastly beer and spirits, rotten stuff fit to make an old goat yell if you poured it down its throat. Pooh! I can't stand the confounded liquor. Never could. A whiff of neat brandy in a glass makes me feel sick. Always did. If everybody was like me, liquor would be going a begging. You think it's funny in a man, don't you?" Schomburg made a vague gesture of toleration. Ricardo hitched up his chair and settled his elbow afresh on the table. "French Syros, I must say I do like. Sagan's the place for them. I see you have Syros in the bar. Hang me if I ain't getting dry, conversing like this with you. Come, Mr. Schomburg, be hospitable, as the governor says." Schomburg rose and walked with dignity to the counter. His footsteps echoed loudly on the floor of polished boards. He took down a bottle, labeled Europe de Grisale. The little sounds he made, the clink of glass, the gurgling of the liquid, the pop of the soda water cork had a preternatural sharpness. He came back carrying a pink and glistening tumbler. Mr. Ricardo had followed his movements with oblique, coyly expectant yellow eyes, like a cat watching the preparation of a saucer of milk, and the satisfied sound, after he had drunk, might have been a slightly modified form of purring, very soft and deep in his throat. It affected Schomburg unpleasantly as another example of something inhuman in those men wherein lay the difficulty of dealing with them. A specter, a cat, an ape, there was a pretty association for a mere man to remonstrate with, he reflected with an inward shudder, for Schomburg had been overpowered, as it were, by his imagination, and his reason could not react against that fanciful view of his guests. And it was not only their appearance. The morals of Mr. Ricardo seemed to him to be pretty much the morals of a cat. Too much. What sort of argument could a mere man offer to a dot-dot, or to a specter either? What the morals of a specter could be, Schomburg had no idea. Something dreadful, no doubt. Compassion certainly had no place in them. As to the ape, well, everybody knew what an ape was. It had no morals. Nothing could be more hopeless. Outwardly, however, having picked up the cigar which he had laid aside to get the drink, with his thick fingers, one of them ornamented by a gold ring, Schomburg smoked with moody composure. Facing him, Ricardo blinked slowly for a time, then closed his eyes altogether, with the placidity of the domestic cat dozing on the hearth rug. In another moment he opened them very wide, and seemed surprised to see Schomburg there. "You're having a very slack time today, aren't you?" he observed. "But then this whole town is confoundedly slack, anyhow. and I've never faced such a slack party at a table before. Come 11 o'clock, they begin to talk of breaking up. What's the matter with them? Want to go to bed so early, or what? I reckon you don't lose a fortune by their wanting to go to bed, said Schomburg, with somber sarcasm. No, admitted Ricardo, with a grin that stretched his thin mouth from ear to ear, giving a sudden glimpse of his white teeth. Why, you see, when I once start, I would play for nuts, for parched peas, for any rubbish. I would play them for their souls. But these Dutchmen aren't any good. They never seem to get warmed up properly, win or lose. I've tried them both ways too. Hang them for a beggarly bloodless lot of animated cucumbers. And if anything out of the way was to happen, they would be just as cool in locking you and your gentleman up, Schomburg snarled unpleasantly. Indeed, said Ricardo slowly, taking Schomburg's measure with his eyes. Andy, what about you? You talk mighty big, burst out the hotel keeper. You talk of ranging all over the world, and doing great things, and taking fortune by the scruff of the neck, but here you stick at this miserable business. It isn't much of a lay, that's a fact, admitted Ricardo unexpectedly. Schomburg was red in the face with audacity. I call it paltry, he spluttered. That's how it looks. Can't call it anything else. Ricardo seemed to be in an accommodating mood. Should be ashamed of it myself, only you see the governor is subject to fits. Schomburg cried out, but in a low tone. You don't say so. He exulted inwardly, as if this disclosure had in some way diminished the difficulty of the situation. That's a serious thing, isn't it? You ought to take him to the civil hospital, a lovely place. Ricardo nodded slightly, with a faint grin. Serious enough. Regular fits of laziness, I call them. Now and then he lays down on me like this, and there's no moving him. If you think I like it, you're a long way out. Generally speaking, I can talk him over. I know how to deal with a gentleman. I am no daily bread slave. But when he has said, Martin, I am bored, apostrophe then look out. There's nothing to do but to shut up, confound it. Schomburg, very much cast down, had listened open-mouthed. What's the cause of it, he asked. Why is he like this? I don't understand. I think I do, said Ricardo. Gentleman, you know, is not such a simple person as you or I, and not so easy to manage either. If only I had something to lever him out with. What do you mean, to lever him out with? Muttered Schomburg hopelessly. Ricardo was impatient with this denseness. Don't you understand English? Look here. I couldn't make this billiard table move an inch if I talked to it from now till the end of days, could I? Well, the governor is like that too, when the fits are on him. He's bored. Nothing's worthwhile, nothing's good enough, that's mere sense. But if I saw a capstan bar lying about here, I would soon manage to shift that billiard table of yours a good many inches. And that's all there is to it. He rose noiselessly, stretched himself, supple and stealthy, with curious sideways movements of his head, and unexpected elongations of his thick body, glanced out of the corners of his eyes in the direction of the door, and finally leaned back against the table, folding his arms on his breast comfortably, in a completely human attitude. That's another thing you can tell a gentleman by his freakishness. A gentleman ain't accountable to nobody, any more than a tramp on the roads. He ain't got to keep time. The governor got like this once in a one-horse Mexican pueblo on the uplands, away from everywhere. He lay all day long in a dark room, drunk. This word escaped Schomburg by inadvertence at which he became frightened. But the devoted secretary seemed to find it natural. No, that never comes on together with this kind of fit. He just lay there full length on a mat, while a ragged, bare-legged boy, that he had picked up in the street sat in the patio, between two Hollanders near the open door of his room, strumming on a guitar and singing trysts to him from morning to night. You know trysts twang, 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 ow, Who? Crew, yeah. Schomburg uplifted his hands in distress. This tribute seemed to flatter Ricardo. His mouth twitched grimly. Like that enough to give colic to an ostrich, eh? Awful. Well, there was a cook there who loved me, an old fat, negro woman with spectacles. I used to hide in the kitchen and turn her to make me dulcet sweet things, you know, mostly eggs and sugar, to pass the time away. I am like a kid for sweet things. And, by the way, why don't you ever have a pudding at your tablet, Mr. Schomburg? Nothing but fruit, morning, noon, and night. Sickening. What do you think a fellow is, a wasp? Schomburg disregarded the injured tone. And how long did that fit, as you call it, last? He asked anxiously. Weeks, months, years, centuries, it seemed to me, returned Mr. Ricardo with feeling. If an evening the governor would stroll out into the sala and fritter his life away playing cards with the Jews of the place, a little dago with a pair of black whiskers, Icardi, you know, a quick French game, for small change. And the commandant, a one-eyed, half-Indian, flat-nosed ruffian, and I, we had to stand around and bet on their hands. It was awful. Awful, echoed Schomburg, in a Teutonic throaty tone of despair. Look here, I need your rooms. To be sure. I have been thinking that for some time past, said Ricardo indifferently. I was mad when I listened to you. This must end. I think you are mad yet, said Ricardo, not even unfolding his arms or shifting his attitude an inch. He lowered his voice to add, and if I thought you had been to the police, I would tell Pedro to... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.